Oh, hey, how are you? Great to hear. Yeah, come in. Make yourself comfortable. Like a drink? Sure. There you go. Welcome to the Tech Lounge. Shall we begin?
Hello, welcome to the Tech Lounge with me, Christian Chiller. It has been a few weeks break. Actually been traveling. I had some work events, and now I am back in Melbourne for the first time in a few years. Time zones, travel, blah, 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 blah. Excuses. Not a good start to 2026, but I am bringing you some really good interviews over the next few weeks from travels last year. There'll be a series of interviews now from Web Summit, the preeminent tech and startup, maybe more startup event in Europe, in Lisbon in November in 2026. And first is an interview with Nancy Wang, who is the Vice President of Engineering for 1Password, a tool that I am sure many of you have heard of, if not use. I personally have used it for a very long time. So it was really interesting to dig into the product, the company, the history, the future plans of something that I know very, very well. Enjoy. Git is an essential tool and workflow for almost any developer in the world these days. And Git can be easy for some, but hard for others. And I've always been a fan of Git graphical tools, Git GUIs that help me and could help you understand some of those more esoteric commands or just speed up what you do on a regular basis. Tower is perhaps one of the oldest and preeminent and best known Mac and Windows Git GUIs. And if you want to get 25% off their full price tool, then head on over to go.christianchiller.com/tower.
To a lot of people, something like a password manager feels kind of, oh, surely everyone knows what it is. Everyone uses it, blah, 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 but it's probably not. So maybe let's just start with absolute basics. What is a password manager? Or what is, yeah. I don't even know if 1Password even calls itself just that anymore. But
yeah.
But what?
Well, if you visit our website, right? Yeah. I think the one thing for probably a more encompassing, like realistic term to call 1Password is a credential vault, right? And so why credential? Because it's more than just passwords, right? Like, for example, you know, I myself as a consumer, I store everything from credit card information to passports, right? Comes really handy when I'm trying to book a flight and I need both types of information plus addresses. And heck, there's even some people who are telling us on the consumer side that they're starting to store birth certificates, right? Driver's licenses, house deeds, for example. Yep. And then of course on the B2B enterprise side, right? There's actually over a million developers who are using the platform to store everything from API keys to tokens to SSH keys to, you know, all the, I would say, you know, login information that they would need, right, to their local dev desktop, et cetera. So when you have that, I would say, widespread of data, right, being stored, I think credentials is really much, I would say, truer word in the sense of what you call stuff within 1Password, right? And then why Vault? So this is where, you know, as a nerd, right, I'm sure you'll appreciate this as well, right? The whole, you know, zero knowledge, right, end-to-end encryption really comes in, which is, you know, because we have this public key, private key model, right, we as 1Password, right, we can't actually see into any of our customers' vaults. So whatever you store in your vault is completely opaque to us, right? But that also means that as we're doing things like, you know, even recently, agentic autofill, right? We're actually able to autofill your credentials to, let's, for example, you know, you're using like a browser agent to buy a pair of jeans, right? We can do everything from going onto your favorite e-commerce website, looking for your pair of jeans, to then filling out your credit card information, shipping home address, so on and so forth, to complete that entire workflow, right, without ever actually seeing the credentials within your vault, right? We can, and that goes back to, I'm happy to share with you our white paper. It's a lot of actually complex, discrete math, actually behind the scenes, to cryptographically prove, right, that everything within those vaults is completely opaque to us as a provider. So with that trust model, right, gives us actually some really interesting opportunities to expand beyond our vaults, right? So if you think about, you know, layers of the cake analogy, right? I'm kind of now drawing like an architecture diagram. And if you have our vaults at the very bottom, right? And on top of the vault, you could sit a policy engine, mm-hmm. right? Of, well, what do you want to fetch into your vault? What do you want to autofill? And so a lot of that sort of intelligence around the policy engine now is dispersed across many areas of the 1Password platform, which could be, you know, something in our browser extension, for example, where we can autofill. And what's really interesting about a browser extension, and I noticed that you recently wrote an article about Opera, right? The intelligent browser.
I was confused because I'm editing a video at the moment on their new Neon. I was kind of like, I haven't published it yet. What the?
No, it was
the
Opera.
The one from a few months
ago. Yeah.
No, so, also an Opera. Opera Neon. It's the. Yeah. But for a second, I was like, what? Did I publish it?
I can see into your disk, no, I can. Yeah, and so for us, right, especially with all the agentic browser wars that are going on, right, OpenAI has, you know, Atlas, right, we're having conversations there. Perplexity has their own local agentic browser. There's now also browser infrastructure companies like BrowserBase, like Kernel, BrowserUse, there's many of them now. Right. And then there's also intelligent browser extensions, which I thought was actually very unique that Anthropic came out for Claude for Chrome, right? Which is Anthropic's not building their own browser, but they're actually building their own Claude enabled browser extension.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So whatever flavor it is. And this is where, you know, actually had an online conversation recently with Nikesh Arora from Palo Alto Networks.
Yeah.
Right, around sort of the enterprise browser, or just more in general, the browser being that like endpoint, right?
Yeah.
So this goes back to, you know, who we are as a company, which is if we are protection for your endpoint, right? So endpoint could be this, could be that, could be your browser, right? Our vault is there, right? And so if you think about, you know, just as a consumer or employee or business person lifecycle, right? There's you in the personal world, there's you in the family social world, and then there's you in a workplace world, right? We can essentially cover you through that entire life cycle.
Yeah.
And so then kind of building upon that, right, whether it's browser or device, autofill, then we can also build upon things like, okay, how do we become that identity broker, right? And now comes the world of agents, right? So while agents, I mean, if you want your agent to actually go do meaningful things, right, even with things like browser agents, you need the agent to be able to access sensitive data.
Yep.
And so if you extrapolate that into a business environment of, let's say, you know, I have Cursor on my laptop and I'm using Cursor as my, let's say, MCP client, right? And I want my agent to go access Salesforce. I want my agent to go access, I don't know, like Google Calendar, right? Because I want, let's say, this agent to be able to make, you know, appointments, right, with my top 10 sales prospects.
Yeah.
So for your agent to do that, it needs access to your Salesforce, right, your Google Calendar, maybe other email, et cetera. And so how do you manage all of that access? Do you want that access to be there forever, right? Then you run into the issue with like long-lived tokens, long-lived credentials. And I mean, you know, you can see the rise, especially now in the security world, of human risk, right, security companies. There's Fable Security that Redpoint is back. There's Adaptive that Andreessen backed. I actually chatted with Joel, who's on their board, right? Because this goes into account takeover, right? And so if you think about account takeover being a risk that always was there because you can get phished, right? Someone can steal your credentials. Now in the agentic world, when you have, you know, 1 to 50, right? Of one human to potentially 50 agents, that account takeover possibility and also risk attack surface just grows exponentially. So now how do we extrapolate us from being a credential vault all the way to enabling, you know, enterprises and businesses to stay secure from account takeover, right? It's a matter of how we build upon our existing policy engine. And also more importantly, how do we insert ourselves into core workflows, right? And that's why, especially, you know, being a developer myself, right, on the developer side, it gets really interesting because authentication is something that you just have to deal with. Right. And how many times have we rolled off in and it failed and bit me in the butt? Right. Like, and that's a real issue. So I think given where we stand today, and, you know, Kathy probably has numbers, way, you know, way more memorized than I do, which I believe is we have something like 1.5 billion credentials.
Million,
right?
Or billion?
Billion.
Yeah. But that sounds,
right?
Yeah. A million sounds a little too small.
1.3. Okay.
1.3
million.
It's a few,
to be
honest.
Million amongst friends. Come
right?
On,
I mean. 180,000, you know, enterprise customers. One has to imagine, you know, at least a couple hundred thousand, you know, devices, right, endpoints. now you see sort of where we can extend our reach.
Yeah.
And I think that's partly also why, you know, I joined 1Password is if you think about any enterprise, you know, agent, for example, right? How hard is it for, you know, people to convince you, let's say, hey, get this MDM on your phone, right? Or get this CrowdStrike agent on your laptop. Yeah. It's a fight, right? I don't want any MDMs on my phone. But the thing is, like, the beauty of 1Password is people willingly want to install 1Password on their devices because it makes them more efficient, right? It's a productivity solution. But behind that productivity solution is actually a very, I would say, industry-leading intelligent vault that on top of the vault, you can do autofill, you can do identity brokering, right? You can do policy management, which is, let's say, you know, only people on, let's say, Kathy's team, right, should be able to access, you know, Canva for PR campaigns from this endpoint, right? Boom, that happens now.
Yeah. The policy agent side of things, I think that was part of, it was a recent acquisition, wasn't
Collide.
It? Yeah, because I keep hearing the podcast ads.
Yeah. No, that's good. We have done our job. Yeah. Yeah. We were calling that internal device trust.
Yeah, so that's the policy agent side of things.
Yes. Right, because the device, right, is an important part of policies. And also, if you extrapolate, you know, from a device, right, there's also device posture, right, device posture management, which
it's
is...
It's okay. It's her husband.
Okay.
He takes all the stealing your stuff.
Yeah, sorry. That's why I didn't even register. I'm like, huh, okay. But thank you, Chris. I appreciate you looking out for me.
So we're talking about security. You gotta...
See, I'm so transparent, you know, it's like...
My wife is here as well. People often don't. It's like, so where do you live? Like, oh, you live in the same place? Like, yeah, we're married. Like, oh, okay.
Yeah, people still can have roommates, right?
Sometimes people don't always realize that you can kind of have like business and personal relationships and do them together.
Right.
Not everyone does it successfully.
Anyway, well, it's okay. We met at work, so we've had to navigate this for the last like 10 years-ish, so...
So
device trust.
Yeah.
So device trust, right? And so if you think about the device and why, you know, we made the acquisition decision, right, for Collide or device trust is the device is an important factor, right, for signal, right? Whether your device is compromised. So if your device, let's say, is compromised, right, I should not be able to access company sensitive information on my device, right? Or if there's malware on my device, I should not be able to look at, let's say, board deck or, you know, revenue information. Yeah. Right. So if we're able to then capture that signal as a feed, right, into how healthy your security posture is, and then based on that posture signal, be able to show you, let's say, information that you are entitled to see, that's where from a policy engine perspective can actually get very interesting.
Yeah. It's interesting though because it brings you into a slightly different world where whilst you could offer that end-to-end solution, a lot of companies will come with other tools that already do that side of things, and maybe they want to migrate at some point. But can you also integrate with those more traditional, like enterprise endpoint protection frameworks?
Oh, of course, that's why we're actually in terms of endpoint. If you think about Zscaler, right? Yeah. Also around the endpoint, ZTNA.
That I keep hearing. Right?
So Zscaler, for example, we announced I believe in August or April.
There's a blog.
A blog. So for example, you know, based on the posture of your device, right? From a Zscaler perspective, then we can spin up essentially temporary, you know, VPN networks, right? To go access. So for example, you know, should you be able to access such host on such, you know, network? And if your device is compromised, then the answer is no, right? Yep. So from a Zscaler perspective, we'll not be able to spin up that VPN. So that's an example. From a, let's say, you know, 1Password plus, let's say, CrowdStrike perspective, that also could get very interesting because there's, you know, different user behavior analytics that you could gather from your device. And also there's a big component here that we haven't talked about yet, which is also SaaS Manager, right? So that's the Trellica acquisition that we made, which is now we can give you that visibility into all of these SaaS applications that your employees have access to, how frequently they are accessing them and when they are accessing them, right? So there's a lot of now telemetry, right, that we can show you through the 1Password admin console of, you know, who your employee, what your employees are accessing, on what devices, right, how often. And then you can sort of draw a signal from that of, well, what's allowed, what's not allowed, what are they entitled to, what they're not entitled to.
And then what's interesting there is onboarding and offboarding, because that's one of the biggest challenges, right, is making sure that once people leave an organization, they're out of those applications.
Yes.
And if they're not behind SSO, yeah. you're kind of hosed. So this actually fixes that problem.
Yeah. No, I've been still in some vaults for a worryingly long time.
Exactly.
Sometimes I've left them myself, being like, I don't think I should be here anymore.
Yeah.
You know? It's a smaller company.
That's a big
company,
use case that a lot of the IT organizations are very
interested in. I would like to talk a little bit about the engineering challenges behind something like this, but also some of the future things you spoke about. But I'd like to go back just very, very quickly, because maybe this is me, and I mean, no, I don't mean this to come across the wrong way, but there was a period of time where 1Password sort of felt like, it felt like a kind of more, you know, a smaller company when it was mostly like a Mac app and the Apple ecosystem. And, you know, there was, then some changes happened. A whole bunch of changes happened very quickly, and the company seemed to transform into something else. What was actually going on at that time to make that seem like that was the case? I mean, maybe it wasn't. And it just looked like it, but yeah.
Before I answer, I'm actually very curious. What do you think we have transformed into?
Well, into a much, it always felt like it was this kind of good app for the
consumers.
The security conscious consumer, usually the prosumer kind of thing. And then more recently, it has become much bigger enterprise play. Because we all know, as much as companies don't want to admit it, people like me paying for 1Password families doesn't keep a business going, really. It's the enterprise stuff that really pays the bills. So a lot of companies have to make a change at some point. But what actually did happen that seemingly made it look like the company went off at that pace quite quickly? And it all happened quite quickly. Was it just a long-term strategy that just happened to... you just have to play out and look
well,
like
I think,
that.
Really. I mean, I think in general... There was, once we got into the business environment, they saw the opportunity, right? Because the fact that a lot of companies were not able to deal with these apps.
Okay,
they were outside of business, so they were not able, like MDM wasn't going to cover everything. And so the companies made a very important strategy, which said, we want to actually secure all sign-ins to all apps from any device. And what we did is, frankly, we went out and looked and we acquired companies and capabilities that we could bring into our suite, the Extended Access Management Suite of products, where we could build this, but where we could build this end-to-end experience for customers. So you'll see kind of the changes in the organization. We brought in folks like Nancy to run our entire engineering organization, who has that technical capability and the vision who can take those acquisitions and actually build a really mature product for the enterprise. So we brought in a lot of talent. You can go
on. See, that's
there.
Why we make a good team.
I have been a customer long enough to remember 1Password 7. That was kind of the moment when things changed a fair bit.
So it's filling an untapped opportunity and need. And now we're fulfilling that through the technology piece. She can talk to how hard that is on the engineering
side. I mean, there's two kind of big challenges there. There's one which is probably more common, which is tying together acquisitions, which is not an uncommon problem.
Yes. That was my Zoom call last night. Yes.
But the other one is, of course, you know, every major high-profile company has security considerations. But when you are a company that main product is security for other people, you probably have to be even more stringent and more strict. And 1Password has generally escaped one or two small kind of instances in the past, but has generally escaped that bad press that a lot of other companies in the space have had.
We have an amazing CISO,
What is that challenge like?
I mean, you know, so look, even as we've explored and also extended our, you know, B2B enterprise business, we haven't forgotten about the consumer, right?
Yeah.
So there's still several millions, I can probably tell you more directly, a number of consumers still using, many millions of consumers, right, using our app, right? And we're still in, you know, the Apple Store, we're still on your Chrome browser, so on and so forth. But what's really interesting as we moved into the enterprise, right? Sure, privacy and security obviously still remains our bread and butter. And so there are certain design decisions that we've made as a technical organization that, you know, we've gone the extra mile. So, for example, I'll share with you, this is actually a blog and we can point it to you as well. We built our own confidential computing enclave, right? because simply through our private public key, that's one, you know, measure, right? But even as we're doing server-side operations inside this confidential computing enclave, right, we can't see what's being done, right, to your vault. And so we went ahead and built it, right?
You mean one in a data center somewhere, or you mean on...
As part of our application, right?
Yes.
So if you think about enterprise,
on device, net. Not strictly on device, but kind of on device.
Yeah, server side. Yeah. And so, you know, we're not just using a third party, right? We could use Nitro, but we actually ended up just deciding to build it ourselves for that extra added measure, right? Going back to cryptographic proof, right? Being verifiable. So, you know, we are taking the extra mile on the engineering side to ensure that privacy and trust and security are not never compromised. So I would say that's probably one leading to, you know, you don't see us a lot in the news, which is good. I want us to be in the news for different reasons, right?
Yeah.
That's one. And then two, on the, you know, integration side, right? Part of what makes a product experience delightful for end customers is really that seamless toggle, right? So how I'm describing of, you know, you have this policy engine, you're able to get visibility into your SaaS applications. In the future, you'll get visibility into like agentic applications, for example, right? All in one admin console. I don't want you to have to go through four admin consoles, right? And part of that is behind the scenes, there is some plumbing work to do, right? Such as, you know, if you're tying different real estate together, how do you track one user role, right? Through, let's say, device trust, through SaaS manager, through the enterprise password manager. Well, behind the scenes, that is unified identity, right? We also want to make sure that as you authenticate, right, into the 1Password platform, you're not authenticating multiple times, right, through different real estate. So all of that needs to be carefully thought through on the back end. And what's also interesting is, you know, given that 1Password has been around for, you know, 20 years, which...
It's been 20 years,
yeah,
wow.
2005, right? There's, you know, many, I would say, architectural modernization attempts that we've had to do as a company.
Yeah.
Right, to make sure that we're adopting the best, you know, microservices, architectural principles. I come from a distributed systems world, right? So you got to make sure that your off end is able to scale independently of all of the other operations, right? So all of that needs to be taken into consideration to always make sure that we're using the best in class infrastructure as well. So that's something, you know, from an engineering team, right? And this may not be sort of transparent to customers, but we're also using AI internally to make sure that we're automating away manual toil, right? So things like build and release, having automated pipelines, making sure that we're able to have our first, you know, review of PRs going out, right? And we're also looking at, for example, on the engineering side, DORA metrics as well, to how productive are developers, right? What is that time from starting to write code all the way to merging that PR, right?
Yeah, okay. Then you mentioned it a little bit in passing, you know, I like the idea of agentic identity. I actually had an interview with another company who were focusing largely on certificates for agentic identities, which was kind of interesting. But also, I don't know how well they're known they are outside of Europe, but DeepL.
DeepL. Translation.
Yeah, they also introduced a kind of agentic enterprise suite. They're based in Berlin, so there was an event last week. And it talked a lot about this as well, and it kind of fascinated me, like, oh, and they can also access systems that don't have APIs and blah, 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 blah. And I was kind of like just thinking how does it know who a person is? But it's coming into this sort of aspect. But firstly, I actually just wanted to, you said agentic autofill.
Yes.
So what, I think I got a vague idea of what that meant, but just, you know, in addition to what you had as an autofill for a while.
Sure. We can actually send you a demo of one of my developers.
I think I got a vague idea, but just to,
Yeah, so happy to follow up with actually more technical documentation on how it works. But the partner we decided to launch with first, and we'll be launching many more as well, so it's a startup called BrowserBase.
Okay.
If you haven't checked it out, very cool company, actually. Paul Klein, the fourth, I got to make sure I say the fourth, he's very pretty good about that, is their CEO. I was like, can I drop the IV? He's like, no, must
IV.
Have that.
IV,
it's IV. Yeah, it's IV, so that's why I remember. Because we shot a video together, and I had to remember. And so, so basically when you set up, they have this product called Director.ai from BrowserBase. And what it is, it spins up remote headless browsers for you, right? Where you have agents running on the browser. And so this goes into services that may not have APIs, right? Because if you, let's say, you know, common example is enterprise ERPs, right?
Yeah.
they don't want to give you clean APIs because they don't want, you know, enterprises to just go and pull information from an API call.
Now I'm starting to wonder if the demo I saw was using this.
So now you can have an agent simply just go into like your SAP or ERP environment and actually just crawl and scrape your DOM, right?
Yeah.
And that is why, going back to my earlier point, the browser has become your endpoint. Because now I can just, before, right, you can lock things down. Right now, you can just have an agent go through your entire like UI on your web page and go, oh, okay, this is this field, this is that field, right? And then go through, you know, scroll your entire like website. So I think, you know, with that, you know, going back to the directory use case. So let's say I want to, you know, book a plane ticket, right, to somewhere.
So
not in the US right now.
It's a classic example. Anyway, carry on, because I have a
go for it.
Practical, we'll try, I mean, I know Opera Neon is a little smaller than some of these, but they all seem to really struggle with flight booking, mostly because of the date pickers.
Gosh.
All these websites use custom date pickers. That everyone I tried, it would kind of, and then we get to a point where it's like, help me, human. So it was sort of odd that a lot of them use this flight booking as an example, but they all seem to get stuck on it, which is odd.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
anyway, I tried it and it,
our demo video is actually successfully booked a flight on Delta. So maybe
The other interesting thing I found, so we live in Berlin, which is not the best served city, especially when you want to go further.
Yeah.
So I was looking at Berlin to Kuala Lumpur. Hmm. And I mean, basically there's three flights. So also after a while, you just realize it's just giving you the same options over and over again because there's not that many options. So it's also just an interesting example of like, there are times when actually it's not massively helpful because I could have found it out myself like that, and it was just showing me the same thing over and over again because there were no other options. There was, I think, internal US flights, you probably have way more things to look at. It was just kind of interesting to see that there's a certain scale where the agentic like browser idea is almost too small for as well, because it's not really necessary. Anyway, sorry.
That's fair, right? And that's why for 1Password, if we think about like what type of agents, right, we want to help serve. So I'm going to try to draw a 2x2, right,
in the air. It makes more sense with you because, you have credit card details and things like that.
So, exactly. Yeah. So there's, you know, local browser agents. So if you have local browser agents and remote browser agents, right, we will be able to serve both categories because on the local browser, you know, there's Perplexity. On the remote browser, there's use cases like BrowserBase, for example, where, you know, you have an agent running your headless browser doing all of these like steps for you and let's say booking a flight.
Yeah, that's
and through every step that requires, you know, sensitive information, right? There's on the left-hand panel, you can say, hey, you know, autofill your credit card and you say approve, right? And so there is some human in the loop and we do that mainly for governance, right? Just to make sure that, hey, you actually do want this agent to go book, you know, a $6,000 business class seat for you, right? For example. And then, of course, you know, if you also think about programmatic agents, which is where, you know, my hypothesis is in the fullness of time, every agent, including those that work in the browser, will also become a programmatic agent as well, right? We're just not there yet right now. And that might be like an 18 to 24 month thing. But even on the programmatic agent side, if it's a local programmatic agent, so use the Cursor IDE example, right? Where you're building, you know, your local MCP client connected to various MCP servers, we can enable you there as well, right? And this is where on the developer side now, you know, there's a sort of theme that, you know, we love to push out and are pushing out, which is secure by default, right? Which is, if you think about, you know, a lot more people being enabled as developers via AI code gen, right? So nowadays, you don't need to have gone to, you know, university for 4 years, right? Get a bachelor's degree to code.
Yeah.
You can go use Cursor, you can go use Replit, so on and so forth, right? But, you know, with that said, those folks may not have had the enterprise training, as I mentioned, of like rolling your own off, right? And so then how do we enable also those developers to be secure?
You said Replit is a very good example, of course, because using something like plugging into to your suite would potentially not let someone just drop a database. You know.
You might have just hit upon my conversation with Michael Cascada at a summit I was on Monday. And that's actually exactly what we talked about, which is, it's like, look, for platforms like Replit, which he told me that their top use case is actually people building their own custom CRMs.
Oh, really?
Which I was like, oh, interesting. And he was like, with CRMs, as you can imagine, there's a whole, like, a load, right, of auth and issues. because who should have access to what sort of deal information, right? Who should be able to see reports on, like, I don't know, revenue or sales forecasts, et cetera. And that is not a space, right, that, you know, folks like them want to own, right? And this is the opportunity that, you know, I see for 1Password, which is we're user-friendly. It is so simple to use. And what I really want, you know, developers to understand, which is it is so much easier to do the right thing from the get-go, which is use 1Password to obfuscate your secrets, right, than to go back after you've been hacked or something's been breached to then try to implement authentication.
Secure by default. I mean, it's not a new phrase, is it? But it's to encourage it in these platforms. And again, like...
Well, secure by default traditionally has meant, you know, let's say using SAST, right? That's a term that a lot of the application security vendors will use, like Snyk or SemGrep, right? Code security. But I think with especially vibe coding or AI-assisted code generation, right? That's taken on a way bigger meaning because anyone these days can write code. Anyone these days can build their own application. However, authentication, the right way to do authorization, has not changed.
Is there a way that you as a company, you know, there's a lot of now effort to try and get various things into the models from a sort of discovery perspective. Is there anything that you have tried or you can try to, you know, when a vibe coder is building an application that the platform deems, you should make this secure? Not advertising, but, you know, like with Supabase, for example, when it's often used to spin up infrastructure, when someone talks about a simple authentication system, 1Password is pulled into that, as opposed to just not doing it. Is there anything you can, I don't know, is there anything you can do to make that happen?
Or? Well, you might be touching upon one of our other upcoming partnerships.
Which we'll come back to you on.
Exactly. But what I can say without naming this partner, because we're literally in the middle of doing MNDAs and stuff. But let's say, you know, if you think about secure by default, right? How can you, well, where is default? Yeah. Default begins with writing your first line of code.
Yeah.
So where does that happen? Developer environments, right? And so we want to be inserted into every major developer environment and also agent builder platform, right? So again, going back to your point, you won't have to double back. It begins by default. And we want to make that experience so seamless where if you think about, okay, how do I build authentication into my app? Or for example, hey, here's my API key that I need to access, blah, right? We'll be there.
It's kind of interesting because for a while, 1Password has been pretty good with having that vault access in CLI, VS Code, GitHub, et cetera, but it almost, with this conversation, it almost feels like this was always part of the plan. But we also know that a lot of the agentic AI stuff we talk about kind of took a lot of people by surprise. So maybe it's just more like good fortune that you happen to be in those places already.
But it's a gift. I mean, and that's obviously a big part of the reason that I share with Kathy that I joined, because, you know, prior to 1Password, I was building voice agents with a company called Mercore, which is also a police workflow. But, you know, part of what we realized back then, which is, you know, you need good identity to understand, like, you know, for example, we're building actually an AI interviewer, right? To do fully autonomous end-to-end interviews for people applying for software development jobs, to people applying for finance jobs, et cetera. Yeah, if you're curious, you can try it, mercore.com/interviews.
Oh, Mercore, okay.
Yeah. Right? And so even for that experience, we had to validate that the person doing the interview, because, you know, if you pass the interview, we were promising, you know, our big clients, I can share OpenAI is one of the biggest clients for that company, right, would actually hire these people. And so you got to make sure that the person sitting in front of the camera is not someone from North Korea, right? Yeah. And so it goes back to also human identity, right?
Yeah. Okay.
We don't want to become known before.
So let's just wrap up with one more question. You mentioned quite a few things in passing that are future announcements that we'll talk about at a later date. But is there anything happening now or in the very near future that you can talk about?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So on the, I would say, you know, in terms of how humans on the B2B side, right, you can access applications and to, you know, Kathy's point around not all applications are behind SSO. In fact, there's, you know, numbers that we can pull for you, but something like 30%, I want to say, of applications is actually behind SSO. A lot of applications these days still can only be accessed via username password. So for those customers, right, we've actually launched App Launcher, which is generally available, which is, if you think about your current Okta dashboard, right, that only represents the subset of applications that are behind SSO. With 1Password App Launcher, it's actually everything behind SSO and in front of SSO, right? All in one dashboard, easily accessible.
Yeah.
So that, that has generally available. And then now, you know, pivoting to the developer side, right? As you know, we already existing have developer SDKs where, for example, in, let's say, your file, you can just simply create a dynamic ref, right, to our vault, and that will autofill secrets, right, as your program during runtime. That's one example. The second example is we've also betaed dev environments. And so what that means is, you know, your config file, right, .m file, where you would store your API keys, et cetera, locally, right, we have a way to actually mount that .m file in memory using, I want to say, this method called FIFO, right, where none of that, it actually sits on disk. Yeah. So if you're a team of, let's say, you know, 3 or 4 developers, and you're actually sharing secrets, I'm no longer pasting or copying and pasting them to Kathy, right? We simply can actually dynamically generate a .m file.
I have a perfect use case for this because I'm building an iOS app, iOS and Mac app, that at the moment I need access keys for APIs. And because of the way that those apps get compiled, it's a nightmare to... It's a nightmare.
Would you like to beta test our product?
Yes, because I have I spent about 2 hours at the hackathon on the weekend trying to get all these access details again because they're on another computer. And so I didn't check in the end file into GitHub and I'd never done it on this computer before. And I was like, I have to go and recreate all of these access codes. So something like that when it can just pull it out of the vault would be... I mean, I think that existed for a little while, but I just never thought to...
Yeah.
To do it, it makes it more seamless.
Yeah, and as you can see from these launches, right, we just want to make it, frankly, stupidly simple for developers to do the right thing.
I think that's not really a problem, but in some respects, you have made it quite simple in a lot of these places, but it hasn't always necessarily felt like part of the flow.
Yeah.
You think, oh, I've got to go and look in Vault or this or that or that.
And
not
the thing
right? Here on my device.
Exactly. And so that's actually how I've encouraged the engineering or just, you know, R&D builder teams to think about building these capabilities. Is if you think about the developer lifecycle, right, from build to test to deploy to prod, right, we want to build, you know, whether it's .m file, right, whether it's secrets autofill, in the future it'll be, you know, agentic autofill, et cetera, right? It should be following, like, the parts of the developer lifecycle, making it seamless, easy to access. Yes.
Perfect. Awesome.
Yes, I would love to get your feedback on the beta dev environment. In fact, recently we chatted with, let's just say, another company that is very similar to Replit, one of our partners as well, where their CTO was just really thrilled. It was like, I want, especially based in San Francisco.
Oh, okay, not the one I'm thinking of.
They said, look, you know, I want you to come in and roll out dev environments to every one of my developers.
Yeah, there's actually it starts to make a whole lot of sense. It's interesting how the identity stuff really comes into play when we talk about a lot of the vibe coding thing. You don't really expect it to, but it kind of does.
Yeah.
All right. I know we've gone well over, so let's...
No, this was a great conversation.
So that was it. That was our guest today. Thank you very much for joining me in the Tech Lounge. I have been Christian Schiller. If you want to know more about Tech Lounge, head on over to christianschiller.com or please tell your friends about us. It's quiet and cozy in here, but the more listeners, the merrier. You can find more at christianschiller.com/podcast or in the show notes or episode notes, wherever you found this podcast. Thank you very much for joining me, and you're most welcome next time.